ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Chapter 27, The Process of Deity Worship. Kitanyasa kitanyasam madhacham paninham brijet talasham prakshaniham cha ketadhan upasarayet prakshaniham. The vessel containing water for sprinkling.
Cha and.
Yatabat.
Appropriately.
Upasadayet.
He should prepare.
Translation. The devotee should sanctify the various parts of his body by touching them. And then with his hands, he should clean the deity of old flowers and the remnants of previous offerings. He should properly prepare the sacred pot and the vessel containing water or sprinkling. Before beginning the process of worship mentioned here, one should offer obeisances to one's spiritual master, the deity, and other worshipable personalities. Kritanyasa kritanyasam matacham paninam vijet kalasam praksan liyancham yatada upasadiyat. The devotee should sanctify the various parts of his body by touching them and chanting mantras. He should do the same for my deity form, and then with his hands he should clean the deity of old flowers and the remnants of previous offerings. He should properly prepare the sacred pot and the vessel containing water for sprinkling. So, in the purport, of course, it mentions that before beginning the process of worship, mentioned here, one should offer obeisances to one's spiritual master, the deity, and other worshipable personalities. So, as you see within this section of the Srimad Bhagavatam, it does go on to describe how one worships various personalities, including the spiritual master. In the purport here, of course, it is describing that before any worship begins properly, one should certainly offer proper obeisances to the spiritual master, the deity, and other worshipable personalities. So, it's described that just like the ghost families of Vrindavan, they went to Vrindavan and established deity worship in Vrindavan. When they arrived there, of course, mostly they were just agricultural fields in the land of Vrindavan, and it was the Goswamis of Vrindavan who established the temples there. And at first, of course, they had some of them had deities of the Lord without a temple, and then gradually the temple came. Sanatana Goswami, as we know, used to have a deity and he used to hang it in a tree or off a branch or what have you. And he used to offer what he could. He would, in fact, I think one day his deity spoke to him and said, you know, because he was making roses, like a little bread, to pass and send it up. His deity said, you know, Sanatan, perhaps just a little salt, you know, wouldn't go astray. And, of course, Sanatan Goswami replied, well, you know, you are sending everything, you know, whatever I have to worship you is actually coming by your grace. So this is, you know, this is what you've sent, this is what I can offer you to worship you. So actually, at about that stage, there was a boat passing along the Jamuna. It was like barges, and it got caught on a sand drift or a sandbar, and could not free itself. And that Sanatan Goswami managed to, being inspired by his deity, he managed to give him instructions and directions by which that boatman was able to free himself. Of course, on that boat he did have a huge quantity of salt which he was trading, which Sanatan Goswami happily accepted to offer, you know, some for his deity on a daily basis. And of course that person said to Sanatan Goswami that he would return after he'd sold his wares and made some wealth, and he did come back, and he actually provided Sanatan Goswami with a lot of money by which they managed to build a wonderful temple for Sanatan Goswami's deities. What are his deities' names? I think Madan Mahar. None of my heart. I think so. gradually, the other Goswamis, you know, they all managed to build various temples. You know, they had them built. Different personalities would assist the Goswamis by donating their wealth. But, you know, previously the Goswamis were worshipping the deities very, very simply, and of course the deities were accepting that deity worship, but because the main thing was that is that when the devotee actually has love and devotion and bhakti for the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Lord is very happy, you know, practically to accept whatever a devotee offers. In fact, you know, practically as a devotee is offering it to the Lord is practically snatching it out of his hand out of intense desire to enjoy the offering of his devotees. We see that Vamsidas Babaji, I think his name was. He was a personality who lived around the time of Srila Bhaktivinoda Kaur, and he was an avaduta. He used to worship the deity of Gopal Krishna, or Bal Krishna, and this Vamsidas Babaji was in the mood. He was he'd actually become elevated to the platform of literally associating with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and entering into the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. On the platform of Vatsalya, or parental affection. So he used to worship his deity just as one would look after a small child, a small boy. Although he carried his deity around in his hand, Vamsidas Babaji Maharaj, externally, he didn't practice any of these, methods, procedures, you know, rules and regulations. But the deity, because the love was there, the bhakti, you know, he actually loved, he understood that he was Krishna. The deity was practically subservient to the loving service of Vamsidas Babaji. You know, Vamsidas Babaji practically didn't bathe at all, you know, himself. He didn't cleanse, you know, anything around him. Sometimes he would, you know, walk naked. Sometimes he would have some clothes on. Sometimes he would eat. Sometimes he would not eat. Sometimes he would offer the Lord just, you know, raw foods, you know, like raw eggplants, or there was no real procedure. He would just put it in his hand and, you know, give to the Lord, and the Lord would just take it. In fact, one day, Srila Vamsidas Babaji was seen to be very angry at his deity. He cooked some sweet rice, and then he got that sweet rice and threw it on the ground. He's saying to his deity, I see, you know, I've gone to the trouble to prepare this, and you've already eaten somewhere else. You know, so he was saying that his deity had managed to acquire an offering of it was a specific type of sweet rice, I think made with date sugar or something, some quite unique preparation. Anyway, devotees inquired, and they had found that at some particular temple, someone had prepared this particular unique, you know, preparation of sweet rice. But Vamsidas Babaji knew that he'd taken that before, you know, the sweet rice that he was cooking for him. So he got really angry. He just threw that sweet rice in the ground and said, you know, you can eat elsewhere from now on. So, you know, he had a mood like that he was caring for the deity, in the mood of Vatsalya Rasa, a very, very elevated devotee. But for most people, he appeared to be somewhat like a madman. And one may consider that, you know, he was very unclean, or, you know, his it would appear that he was very, you know, disrespectful, you know, externally, because not only did he not do any of the things that we're supposed to do in regular devotional service, he did many of the things that you're not supposed to do. But for the one factor that he actually had such intense, pure love, on a level that we cannot even begin to understand, the deity of the Lord, accepted everything, even when he was angry. So even when Vamsidas Babaji might be angry at Bal Krishna, the deity also accepted this as his loving reciprocation, in the same way that children sometimes, you know, when the parents become angry, they understand that this is all part of, you know, the parents loving the child, looking after them, making sure that everything is there. So that is the main thing. Of course, on for those who are coming from the material platform, that love is you know, just beginning or just developing as they're coming to devotional service and trying to learn how to worship the Lord. And therefore, because there is a mixture of some a tendency to offer devotional activities to the Lord, and then there's a tendency that one's conditioning or bad habits may also be there, therefore there are rules and regulations which check the bad habits and the sense gratification or the laziness or the disrespect or anything like that from into spoiling one's service. So the rules and regulations are there for us, coming from the conditioned platform, just to make sure that because we don't have that mood of pure spontaneous love to such a degree, that we don't commit offences because we're approaching the Supreme Lord. And therefore, everything has to be done in order to evoke that mood of respect and love. There are so many different procedures, just like here. The devotee should sanctify the various parts of his body by touching them and chanting mantras. So there are certain mantras that the devotees chant. Within those mantras, they invoke a particular name of the Lord, and they touch the various parts of their face and body, and they're called nyasas, and they also do that with the deity. In this way, they make the body very much sanctified. And they also cleanse the deity very, very nicely. So this helps the devotee to maintain the, or to, cultivate that purity and sense of sacredness. In this world, of course, people do not have anything these days which are sacred. Many people, they have nothing in their life at all which is sacred. Not their relationships with other people. Just like in previous times, one's relationship with one's parents, with one's partner, with one's children, with one's mother. These relationships were all considered to be, to have some degree of being sacred, to a person. Just like if when something is very sacred, it means that one is very, very careful in every particular dealing, knowing that that object or that personality is the object of of their worship and love in one sense, and they never want to disrespect that object of their love or affection or attachment. The relationship between men and women, or a husband and wife, it is something which is kept very, very confidential, that a chaste wife, she does not in public, and also a husband, both towards each other, in public, they actually don't display their affection towards each other. It is something which is very, very sacred, something which they treasure. it is something that they do not, they would never want other people to somehow belittle or to condescend, or to see it in a critical way or a degraded way. So actually, previously, going back in time, even in the Western world, what to speak of places like India, the relationship between the husband and wife their affectionate dealings. You know, in public they were very, very careful. There was very, very little displays of you know, public affection, practically none. And Prabhupada used to say that, you know, his even in his time when he was a child, if his mother, you know, would go out to the street, you know, she would go in a covered palanquin, you know, even in Prabhupada's time. Because you know, the mother, you know, she was a sacred personality, you know. So, so of course these days, you know, there's nothing sacred, you know. It's kiss and tell, you know. Someone has some so-called affection, or you know, these days it's all lust. Some dealing with the opposite sex, and then it's just plastered all over the internet for the whole world, you know, to see. And yeah, nothing is sacred these days. Everything is trashed. Everything is just like now. You see that they're having the royal wedding of the prince and the princess, who, you know, may be the future king and queen. So you know, there will not be one detail which will not be splattered all over the television, all over the newspapers, and you can guarantee that in order to sell newspapers and to get advertising, that if there's the slightest little bit of a criticism, or you know, somehow they can degrade it, or you know, bring it down, you know, somehow belittle it, or what have you, that will be done at every single opportunity. So in this way we see that even on the highest level, the private lives of so-called, you know, aristocracy and what have you, nothing is sacred. Everything can be trashed, even by the lowest, you know, common man will have their trashy opinions and statements and what have you about anything that they like. So this is the nature. And of course, we would never want that sort of to lose the sacredness of deity worship. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur used to say that many of the brahmanas who are worshipping the shalagram in the temples, that they are using the shalagram like a stone for cracking nuts. So that, he was saying that is their mentality. Not that they were doing that, but he was saying that for them the shalagram was no more than a stone. In the same way you pick up a stone and you might get some, you know, walnuts or something, smash it, you know, try and crack open that nut. And why you want to do that? Because you want to feed your belly. You want to feed your belly, make your senses, you know, all strong and agitated, and then, you know, you want to enjoy sense gratification like this. So, he was saying that that's the mentality that people have, that the priests are having for the deities and the shalagrams, that they're just seeing them like that. So the sacredness of those shalagrams is, or the deity is being degraded to, here is a stone that I can make some money from to fill my belly. You see? So, in this way, you know, that's why all these different intricate procedures, they're not just a ritual for the sake of, you know, a show of pomp and circumstance, but that they, each and every little item of deity worship, each rule, each regulation, has a particular purpose to play in order to maintain the sacredness of worshipping the deity form, which is considered to be not different from the Lord. So, you know, therefore, we see that, you know, within ISKCON, the ISKCON goes along on bhakti, goes on two rails. The train of bhakti goes on two rails. One rail is the Bhagavat Vidhi, and the other rail is the Pancharatrika Vidhi. Bhagavat Marga and the Pancharatrika Vidhi. The Pancharatrika is the process of deity worship, and of course this was the emblem in Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Kaur's Gaudiya Math as well, that if you saw their emblem, on one side you have the Bhagavatam, and on the other side I think it was what was that? I think it's a deity. Yeah, maybe. So in this way, you know, showing, and Prabhupada's movement is the same, that by maintaining the Bhagavad Marga is the process of hearing, chanting, preaching, book distribution, in order to cultivate the attitude of the scientific understanding of God consciousness, self-realization, God realization, and the science of bhakti yoga, or the intimate loving relationship between the living entity and the Supreme Lord. That is developed through the hearing and the chanting and remembering, study of the books, study of the shastras. And at the same time, the other rail is the deity worship. So if the deity worship goes on without a strong emphasis on hearing and chanting, then what will happen is that the deity worship will gradually degrade. That because without the hearing and chanting, and a strong understanding of the science of God consciousness, what will happen is people will naturally, the bad habits, the laziness, the mundane motivations, the mundane qualities enter into one's worship of the deity, and these different rules and regulations, one may think that, you know, without a proper understanding, one may minimize them or reduce them and do away with them. Just like Jujuna Swami was saying, that you know, he came across the Shalagram Shilas, the original Shalagram Shilas were worshipped by Narottam Das Thakur, and you know, there were some other Shilas there as well, but he noticed that, you know, the worship, you know, had been reduced to just basically just a sprinkle of water. You know, that was pretty much it. It was the whole worship. So, you know, over the years, you can imagine how Narottam Das Thakur may have worshipped his Lord, you know, in the same mood as the Goswamis. And gradually, you know, because the hearing and chanting, studying Srila Prabhupada's books, preaching Krishna consciousness, when that reduces, all the intricacies and the rules and regulations of deity worship also reduced down to nothing. And one day, it basically, as Prabhupada says, the deity just becomes like a stone burden that one feels like one is carrying around one's neck. That's what he said. If the hearing and chanting is not there, then one will just feel that the deities are just like a stone rock that are just a heavy burden which are just strung around one's neck. Like that, you know, that you know, so many, you know, we have to decorate this, and we have to, you know, buy this, and we have to keep everything clean. You know, so much, you know, different activities are there, and if there's no devotion, that devotion and the understanding diminishes due to a lack of hearing and chanting. Devotees will not be able to perform it. Therefore, you know, people throughout India, and anyone who's who knows about deity worship, when they come to an ISKCON temple, and especially places like here in Melbourne, they can immediately recognize that there's just so much bhakti. You know, because of the wonderful way that the devotees daily, regularly and just continually worship the deities, everything is done so nicely, everything is kept so clean. And that is always a symptom that the preaching mood in the temple is very strong. Actually, it's the preaching mood, which actually sustains the deity worship. People forget that. As soon as that preaching mood diminishes, the hearing, the chanting, then you'll find that proportionately the deity worship, the preaching will diminish, but also the deity worship will diminish. But by maintaining a strong mood of preaching in the temple, that means the hearing and chanting is going on so powerfully, because when there's hearing and chanting, that is very good. But if that hearing and chanting is done in a very mature and elevated way, that means the realizations of the devotees should be overflowing, just bursting out of them so much that they need to speak to hundreds of people. Just the various realizations and the various ecstatic feelings that they're developing through the hearing and chanting association, that wants to overflow to everyone. That means the hearing and chanting is going on very nicely, very, very strongly. And when that is there, then naturally the Lord is very, very sacred, very, very dear, very much loved by those devotees, and they're very happy that each and every of these little intricate rules and regulations of deity worship is done to the best of the ability, to always make sure that the sacred Lord of their heart is always worshipped very, very nicely. So I'll just leave it there. If anyone has any questions or comments. Preaching is a manifestation of Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. And it can take many different forms. So preaching means street Kirtan, Harinam Kirtan on the streets, chanting holy names so people can hear. It means book distribution. It means prasadam distribution. It means different public relations festivals and activities. All the different ways in which we contact the general mass of people. We go out to them and try to give them a taste of attract them to Krishna consciousness. That's all preaching. Any way that is done, there are many different methods. And of course, within preaching, there is those who are on the front line, and there are those who are supporting the front line preachers. They're all doing sankirtan. They're all preaching. So those persons who are typing and editing, to make sure that there are books to print, and those people, stacking the books, and those people who are cooking for the devotees, those people who are doing computer work to maintain the databases of all the people who are being contacted and cultivated, so that we can help them to have further contact with the devotees to increase their attraction to Krishna. Those who are keeping the temple running, managed. Practically every devotee, every service they do, can be considered preaching if they're in that mood. If they're in that mood. Prabhupada used to give the example that the British used to have a slogan that, you know, you keep the train running. So, when they were, you know, to keep the train running, that means that some people had to be digging, you know, clearing a path for the tracks to go on. Some people were then laying tracks. Some people were building the trains. Some people were cleaning the trains. There might be a few drivers driving each of the trains. Everyone who is playing some part, they're basically keeping that train running. So that's the Prabhupada used to give that example, that that's what the Sankirtan movement should be like, that every devotee, they're all doing something to keep that preaching, you know, going. You know, they're doing deity worship, they're cooking, they're cleaning, massaging the devotees, keeping them fit and healthy, whatever. But they've all got that same mood. So in the same way, if someone is laying the tracks, you know, they don't consider that they're doing something independently. You know, they understand that what I am doing is keeping that train running. And every devotee in the temple should have that preaching mood, even the pujaris. You know, even the pujaris who practically, if they may never go out, they actually still should have that preaching mood that I am worshipping, you know, the deities here, and that deity worship is one of the supporting mechanisms of the preaching movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Because actually, you know, Prabhupada mentioned many, many times that although the rails of ISKCON go on two tracks, that is the Bhagavat Marg, which is hearing, chanting, remembering, and the Pancharatrika Marga, which is the deity worship. Of the two, although they're absolute, there's no higher or lower in those services. One should never consider that one service is higher and lower, that someone is preaching that they're higher than a pujari, or that the pujari thinks that they're higher than that they're absolute. There's no higher and lower. But because of the nature of the age we live in, we should favour the preaching. It's more important, you know, in that sense. That, for instance, to give an example, that we may be maintaining, within someone's home, there are so many activities. They're all very important. Cleaning the home, cooking, paying the bills, so many things. But if there is a fire in the kitchen, then although everything is equally important, you know, the first thing that we must put out that fire, you know, that's a priority. So preaching in that sense, you know, maybe that's the word for it, it's a priority. You know, it's very, very important. Must keep up that preaching mood very strongly as a priority. Because, you know, the nature of Kali Yuga, the influence of Kali Yuga is very strong. So not only if we don't keep up the preaching movement does it mean that so many people will become degraded and suffer in this age, very, very, very horrible age. Everyone is suffering so bad. And whenever someone contacts a devotee of the Lord, it means that their practically unlimited cycle of birth and death in the material world of suffering, basically that comes to an end, that draws to an end when they contact a devotee. So, you know, the amount of suffering that the devotees can reduce is incalculable. As soon as someone comes in contact with the devotee, and that devotee is able to, you know, plant a tiny seed of desire and attachment to Krishna, it's basically bringing to an end their term of duration of conditioned life in the material world is come to an end, basically, at that point. So, very, very important. And when without that association of the devotees, those people, life after life after life, in so many species of life, will suffer. So, you know, it's a priority, you know, that you take the opportunity to catch as many people as you can and help them to realize you are not this body, you're a spirit soul, you're eternal, part and parcel of Krishna, go back to the spiritual world, you know. Because if they're in the human form of life now and they don't contact a devotee before they die and they become an animal, it could be, you know, that opportunity may not come for millions and millions of years. So it's a priority. It's a very important work. But also for the devotees, because, as we said, if they're not, just overflowing with that mood of hearing and chanting about the glories of the Lord, which manifests in preaching. That's when the hearing and chanting is really strong in a devotee's life, that they naturally want to preach, so it should be to that level. If they're not in that mood, their activities in Krishna consciousness will also reduce down to nothing. And we see that, how easy it is for devotees, you know, who are sometimes very, very fixed up, going along very nicely for many years, but sometimes, you know, if even they're doing a regular service, but when that mood of preaching wanes, they're actually in a little bit of a dangerous position. It means that they're, you know, the hearing and chanting in their devotional life is not as strong as it should be. And when it's not as strong as it should be, their, you know, situation is a little tenuous. So for the devotees and for the mass of people, the preaching is a priority activity that must be there. Yeah. Yeah.
Oh,
exactly. Yes, very good point. Yeah. Another time, Srila Prabhupada was in Vrindavan. They had just completed opening the Vrindavan temple. I think they'd either completed it or they're on the verge of it. But, and it was a massive, big, you know, endeavor. And then at that same time, one of the devotees came from America with the latest edition of one of his Srimad Bhagavatams, I think it was, and Srila Prabhupada opened it up and he said, you know, as important as this is, you know, establishing this temple, Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, this book distribution is more important. That's what he said. You know, right in the thick of, you know, one of the major projects of ISKCON, you know, Krishna Balaram temple in Vrindavan, such a powerful, important service. And he said, you know, this book distribution is more, you know, so must emphasize that the services are absolute. One should never consider that one devotee is doing one service is ever inferior to another devotee doing it. It is absolute. Just like if Srila Prabhupada is making garlands, does that mean that, you know, that service is less than one of his disciples going out and distributing books? You see what I mean? It's the devotee's mood in doing any service, you know, which establishes its credentials. We should not consider one service to be less than another, or one devotee to be less or more than another, because, you know, and that includes managers. Just because someone is a manager does not necessarily mean that they're actually doing a service which is considered more elevated than someone who is not managing. And sometimes, you know, especially monks managers, they can get very puffed up like that. And I gave the example the other day that Sri Jayananda Prabhu, he was temple president, and he, you know, asked Prabhupada, can I, you know, not do this, you know, and can I just drive the devotees out on Sankirtan? And Prabhupada was very, very pleased. Yes, 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 this is very important, I did. You know? So we should be very careful not to, you know, put a material conception, but although all services are absolute, there is a priority because of the emergency situation that we must, for our own spiritual life and for others, we must always maintain a strong mood of preaching. That means a strong mood of hearing and chanting, and that should overflow in a preaching mood. Alright, thank you. Hare Krishna.